But for us, we're physical value add. We want to physically improve the property. And if we can't physically improve the property, it's really difficult for us to buy an asset. It doesn't make sense.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Hey, Pillars of Wealth Creation listeners, hope you're doing well. 2024 is another crazy year, of course, and we're all navigating through the differences and the changes and looking for the opportunities that are out there. So hope you're finding the opportunities. Continue to keep looking for those opportunities as they are out there, and you will find them if you're continuing to pursue. So today I want to talk about those deals and what you are looking for and what we're looking for. And one of the things that I really want to hit on is just the details of the progression, I guess, the changes that we've made and I've made as I've gone through my investing journey, right? And so when I first started investing, I was buying. Quite frankly, it wasn't really that well thought out. I mean, yeah, it was, but not as well thought out as is right now. And even over the last couple of years, we've changed to what we're looking at buying. And so what we feel is a good deal now is different than a good deal, certainly a good deal when I started, but even just a couple of years ago, it's different in what we're looking for. And that's mainly because we've taken lumps along the way. We've learned through experience at what to avoid and what we really like to see. And just understanding what's out there in the market. And so we have bought a lot of different property types in a lot of different neighborhoods, different risk profiles, different strategies, all that kind of stuff, and have sifted through and now have landed kind of more on our ideal properties. And not saying that's going to stay the same, because I'm sure we're going to continue to learn and grow and understand differences between what we feel like the best property is today versus what we're going to feel like the best property is in another 10 or 15 years. So, but when I first started, I was just looking for a good deal. And I didn't really know too much about what a good deal looked like. But what I did want to do is stay out of the worst of the worst areas. But what I ended up doing is I wanted cheap properties. I wanted properties that I could get into for cheap, because quite frankly, I didn't have much money at all. And so I wanted to make sure I could get into a property for really cheap. I knew better than to not invest in the worst neighborhood. And so as I was looking at properties and I'm driving around, geez, this is really rough. You're like, there's homeless people around. You know, you could just tell, like, every other house is boarded. It looks really, really rough. And people would tell me that's a terrible neighborhood. Well, and then as I'm going, I've got some, you know, realtors that are like, hey, this area is not so bad. And so I started buying in those areas, and they were kind of on the fringe, right? And so you think about the homeless people and the drugs and the crime that's happening. I'm right on the border. The neighborhood that I'm investing in looks nice. And quite frankly, it was pretty nice overall, but still not great. Right, still not great, guys. So I'm buying these, you know, houses that are pretty cheap, and they're quite frankly affected a lot by this really bad neighborhood. And so I'm on the fringe here, buying these other cheap properties that are much better neighborhood, but still not great. And I continue to do that for quite some time, and then as I continue to buy in these cheaper neighborhoods and getting good rents and, you know, but still dealing with some problems, dealing with some evictions, all that kind of stuff, I started to see that the properties that I purchased in better neighborhoods were appreciating quicker, and the rents were going up faster. So I'll give you a perfect example. One neighborhood I purchased in was definitely an up and coming neighborhood, and it was this neighborhood that had a lot of promise and future development that was going to be happening in it. And you could really tell, like there's some things that pointed you in that direction. Of course, the people that were moving in were younger professionals. Future development that was being kind of prompt and promoted into the area was like art studios and studio lofts and coffee shops and things like that. So those types of things, and a lot of the development wasn't happening at that time because this is 2000, 8, 9, 10, where pretty much everything just shut off. But when you look at what was proposed to go in 2007, 2008, and then shut off, that was the type of stuff. And you looked at, okay, what it just looks like it's going to be happening is, again, still that type of stuff. So ended up investing in anyways in this neighborhood, and the property values went up, the rents went up. One of the deals I purchased, the first tenant I got, I was charging $750 a month for rent. I think it was $700 for the lower unit, 750 for the upper unit. And right now, today, I think we're charging about 1700. And the building value, when I first purchased it, I think I purchased it for about $60,000. And now it's probably close to $350,000, $400,000. Yeah, and I don't mean to say that to, brag or to tout how much profit we're making, but what I want to tell you is that I've noticed that some of these nicer neighborhoods, doesn't have to be the best of the best neighborhoods, but if you can find, especially if we ever have a real estate crash again, I shouldn't say ever, when, it's, I don't know if it's coming now or it's coming in 20 years from now, but when we have an opportunity to buy properties for a discount, find the better neighborhoods. They don't have to be the best, but B class or better neighborhoods that have lower crime and have good things going on, have development that's happening in the area. People are wanting to move into that area. Those are the neighborhoods that can really skyrocket and really help boost your portfolio. So we want to look for those neighborhoods. And so what I noticed is my properties did well, right? I would buy for $50,000 and now they're worth $200,000. And the rents were at, $1,200, and now that same rent is at $1,600. But had I bought in a different neighborhood, all right, the rent would have been maybe a little bit more. Okay. The cost of the building was more. I couldn't have bought it for 50. I would have been at, 90, 100. By the way, this is 2008, 9, 10, when things were, you're like, what are these prices? Where is this guy buying? But look, that was when things were burning down, right? So prices were super cheap. It was just crazy how cheap prices were. But I'm buying these places and could have paid double into a different neighborhood, maybe even two and a half, three times more. But what I was seeing is that rent in that neighborhood, instead of being 1200, was 1500, and then that rent went from 15 to 3000, so it like pretty much doubled, or 2500, but it went up drastically compared to the neighborhood I ended up buying. The value of the building, even though I maybe purchased it for three times as much, $150,000, now that building's worth, now that house is worth $500,000. So percentage wise, the profits, increased greater, but the more importantly, dollar wise, the profits increased a lot greater as well. And so thinking about the neighborhood you're buying in my opinion, but now we're buying in better neighborhoods. We don't have to be in the top neighborhood, but if we can, that's where we're buying. If it financially makes sense. Look, right now, today, if I were to go back in time and I were to say, hey, I can get back to 2008, 2009, 2010, I would buy in the best possible neighborhood that I could buy in that financially made sense for me to be able to cash flow it. Okay. That's what I would look at because those values went up the most, both in the rent rates and in the house increase. So that's what I'm looking for. So here's what I look for in a good deal. This is what we look for today. First of all, know and dial in your criteria. Understand. So we're looking for a good neighborhood with low crime that's growing, that has some positive things happening to it. Businesses coming in, the types of businesses that are coming in, that's what we're looking for. We want to dial in exactly what we want to find. Okay. We are saying, hey, we want to buy a 100 plus unit building. We want to, it's got to be built in, 1980 or newer. It's got to have washer dryers in unit or be able to have push washer dryers in the units. Okay. It has to meet XYZ criteria. We want to get as detailed as possible. And I want to understand the neighborhood too and the dynamics that we're going to be in that criteria. Okay. If I tell that to a broker, if I'm knowing that in my head and understanding it, then every deal I look at is going to hit that criteria. And the deals that don't, it's easy for me to go, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm going to push that one to the side. I'm not going to look at that deal right now. And maybe you could bend a little bit on the criteria, but don't just look for a good deal. That's the worst strategy you can have. Because look, think, liken it to buying a car. If you're going to go out and you want to buy a car and you're just looking for a good deal, you're never going to find it. You just aren't, right? You're never going to find a good deal because what's a good deal? Is it a Ford Focus? Is that what you're looking for? Or is it a Corvette, right? If you want to buy a Corvette for a really good deal, then you start looking for Corvettes. And you're looking and seeing the prices that these Corvettes are selling for. And better yet, I want to buy a 1975 Corvette Stingray. So now I'm looking and finding out all these 1975 Corvette Stingrays. And then I can go, wow, that's a great deal. All of a sudden this comes up, it's selling for $26,000. Everything else will sell for $35,000. Boom. Now I got my vehicle, right? I know exactly. So, okay, now what's wrong with it, right? Of course, we got to do our inspection, but if everything checks out, I know I found a great deal. And that's the same with the properties you're purchasing. Know your criteria, dial it in into detail, and be strict with it. Stick with it. Those properties will come, unless you're unrealistic, but those properties will come. But again, you want to dial it in. You don't want to be so broad-based that it covers almost every property on the market because you're not going to know when that good deal comes. And you're going to end up getting into a bad deal. You're going to end up not understanding why you got in a bad deal. It's because you didn't even know what you're looking for. And you didn't know how to define that at all. So define it in detail. The next thing is know and understand the strategy. And this is a part of, by the way, everything here, I'm going to talk about four different main things, and everything ties together. Okay? So the strategy is going to tie, of course, with the criteria. But I want to know, is this a value add? Is this a straight cash play, cash flow play? Is it a newer property, so we're not going to touch it? Is it in a gentrified neighborhood and it's an older, historic building, so we're going to go through and do certain things to it, restore the history, do some modern pizzazz to it. Like, what are we going to do here? What's the strategy? What do I truly focus on? For us, we focus on physical value add. Of course, we're always looking for expense value add as well, and other just things that are, low-hanging fruit, but for us, we're physical value add. We want to physically improve the property. And if we can't physically improve the property, it's really difficult for us to buy an asset. It doesn't make sense. So we're, wanting to go into a property and we're going to want to, get in and get a little dirty, right? And we're going to want to physically make that property better. Outdated property, bring it to today's modern look and feel. And of course, with that, we're likely raising rents and hopefully lowering expenses as well. And that's our value add. we don't know our strategy, if we're just, again, looking for that good deal, it's hard to underwrite a deal and say this deal makes sense, because a lot of deals don't make sense unless you know your specific strategy. And we always wonder, why is somebody buying this deal for more than I am? Like, these guys are crazy. Well, maybe they are. Maybe they're overpaid for it. Maybe it's not going to work out well for them. Or maybe they just have a different strategy than you. Maybe they have a different team than you. Maybe they have a different risk tolerance than you. Maybe they have a different criteria than you, right? Those are the things we're talking about. And so understanding your strategy is going to help you score more deals of the right kind out of the wrong kind, of course. So just because somebody's overpaying, in your terms, doesn't mean they're actually overpaying for what they have going on. They might have different money. They might have a different plan. And you didn't think about it like that. So the next thing, and this is super important, is the team. What kind of team do you have in place? We want to think about the contractors we have in place. We want to think about, can we complete this renovation? Look, I've gotten into deals where I had too big of a renovation and I didn't have the right team. And I shouldn't say too big for the team I had in place, right? Didn't have the right team in place to complete the large amount of renovation that was needed. And that was, the team was both on the construction side and the property management side. It wasn't a good enough team to complete that large and detailed of renovations. And it hurts when you do that. So make sure you have the right contractors in place and the right property management company in place. Make sure you can actually handle the type of project you're doing. Look, if I've got the wrong property management in place, so we had a conversation last week with a property management group that we were looking at, and looking at taking over one of our properties. And it's a smaller property. It's a just about 100 unit property. And they said, look, it's not a fit for us. We just couldn't run it efficiently for you. We could certainly run it, but we wouldn't be able to run it efficiently because we would run it like it's 150 unit building. And that's what we specialize in, is 150 units or larger. And so that's how we run this building. And it financially, it probably wouldn't work for you because here's the expenses. This is why. But they were dialed in. They knew exactly what they were managing. And now look, if I thought this is my management company, I'm going to buy properties and these guys are great, I'm going to hitch my wagon to them. And I end up buying this 90 unit property, 80 unit property, whatever it is. And these guys are like, hey, that doesn't fit. Now I'm sitting here scrambling for a property management company. So make sure you have the right team in place first. Okay. Same thing with, like, look, low income, we talk about strategy, low income housing tax credits, right? Low income tax credits are fantastic. Some people do really well with them, but they aren't experts in it. Or they are experts in it, sorry. They are experts in it. And they've got the team in place that's experts in it. They know how to deal with the government. They know how to deal with the residents. And they know how to deal with the caseworkers. They just understand what goes into place to be able to make those deals successful. They're going to do well, okay, with these low-income tax credits, Section 8, that type of stuff. But if you take and put them in an A-class property, they're going to do terrible. It's like, well, wait, how? It's like so easy, right? Yeah, it's easy for people that understand that type of housing. It's easy if you have the right team in place for that type of housing. But if you take somebody who's typically used to dealing with low income and you put them in an A-class property, those residents have different demands. Those residents have different expectations. It's just totally different. And you're probably, quite frankly, even if you can handle that side of the business, you're just set up improperly, right? You have different people in place. You have too many things in place for an A-class property, not the right things in place for the A-class property. So make sure that you're finding team members, management, whether it's third party or in-house, making sure you're finding the right people in the right seats of the bus. That's going to be huge for your success. The last thing is your risk tolerance. And understanding your risk tolerance, I think, is really important. So this is, dials into a lot of different things. So your neighborhood, right? Do you want to be in that neighborhood that's a little on the fringe, right? Where we have Section 8, we have low-income housing, and we need to understand that. And we've got higher kind of turnover, we've got higher delinquency rates, we've got higher crime, we've got those things that we have to deal with. Do you want to buy in those neighborhoods? Because, by the way, on paper, they look fantastic. They look like you're just going to absolutely do amazing on paper. But then reality happens, and the tenant leaves, and they trash the place, and blah, blah, blah. You know, and all of a sudden, that on paper, you're making $500 a month per tenant. Now, all of a sudden, you're making $100 a month per tenant, and that maybe doesn't work with your loan, work with your strategy. You just can't do that and sustain it. And all of a sudden, you're like, crap, what do I do here? So on paper, those properties look fantastic. And if you don't know what you're doing and you don't know how to underwrite those deals, they will look amazing, right? If you know what you're doing, you know how to underwrite them, they'll look like they look, right? You'll be probably fairly accurate, like, hey, we're going to have a 10% delinquency rate. We're going to have, 90% occupancy, not 95% occupancy. We're going to have a turnover of 60%. And every time we have a turnover, it's going to cost us $2,000 to turn it over. Versus if you're looking at a different asset class, those numbers might be totally different. And if you underwrite the same on each asset class, you're just going to either never get a deal or you're going to be rude because you didn't underwrite properly for the neighborhood. That's going to take more more work, more action from you. Financing. This one's huge, right? Have the right financing for your strategy and understand it. And when we talk about people getting deals, that you're like, I don't know how they got that deal, how they paid for it. Well, they probably had different financing in place. They maybe have some private money that just doesn't need a high amount of returns. They're looking for a tax shelter. Maybe they can get tax credits for certain things, and it doesn't necessarily even need to be low income tax credits. It could be energy tax credits. It could be historic tax credits. There's all kinds of different tax credits. If you're really good at that type of stuff, maybe you can get that type of thing in order to get into a property for more money, which gives you potentially even better returns than somebody who's got more traditional type financing. So understand your business plan too, right? So with financing, I want to know, like, hey, am I going to hold this for 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, 20 years? It makes a big difference in the type of financing I get. There's bridge financing, and there's long-term financing. There's all kinds of different options in commercial real estate. You know, residential, there's a little less options, but there's still hard money. There's your regular 30-year fixed, and there's the local banks that'll finance it for like a 20, 25-year amortization locked in for, 3, 5, 7, 10 years. So there's options. Understand what you're trying to do. Understand if if you're going to sell it in 3 years, it probably doesn't make sense to lock in a mortgage that's fixed for 10 years, right? It has big prepayment penalties. Probably doesn't make sense. So we got to want to do something shorter term so we can get in and out of that asset quickly. But understand that adds a layer of risk to the profile. And potentially a lot of risk to the profile. So how do we mitigate that risk if we want to, right? We put some more money to the side in cash account to be able to pay for, a rate cap, or to be able to just have good reserves to be able to potentially refinance if the market shifts. But even so, you're going to have greater amount of risk. You just are. If you're not locked in long term and interest rates go way up, even if you've got a rate cap on and you can't sell that building, you got to refinance, you're going to be potentially in a bind, right? You're going to potentially have to come up with more money, whatever that might be. So just understand, your risk with that. The last risk, and there's many more, by the way, is just the age of the building. We want newer buildings, but they don't need to be super new, but newer buildings are going to have less problems. And the problems that you're probably going to get with most older buildings, you certainly have some structural problems, which that you can sniff out, I think, fairly easy and just decide if you want to deal with that or not. But the other risk that you have is the mechanicals. And so you have your plumbing, your electrical, and your HVAC, right? And those can be big problems. The last thing is you have obsolescence. And this is one thing that I think is really important. A lot of people don't think about. Look, we have changing demographics all the time. People want different things. Newer buildings, the newer the building, the more we are in tune with what people want today, okay? And so the older the building means the less in tune typically we are with what people want today. And so you look at an older building, it's got smaller closets, smaller bedrooms. It's got small kitchens. It has the galley kitchen. It has a tuck under garage, or it's, low ceilings, those types of things. Maybe it doesn't even have central air. It's got an air unit, and boiler heat, so things like that. Doesn't have washer dryers in unit. So understand, look, older building might not attract the residents you're looking for, even if it's in the neighborhood that you think is really good, but is it out of date? And even if you remodel it, it still is out of date because it's just what people don't want, right? And it doesn't work for them. So understand type of building you have, type of building you're looking to buy, and what people actually want, specifically what people want in that neighborhood. Okay, if you're going for low income tax credit, low income housing, doesn't have to be tax credit, but lower income housing, it might be fine to have some of those things that I mentioned, low ceilings and no washer dryers and units and that type of stuff, right? Those residents expect that a lot of times. And so if you can make that building look nicer, you can attract maybe the best of the best because that is the best building in the area, even though it's missing all that stuff that I talked about. They just expect it, and that's okay. But if you're in a nice neighborhood, you're expecting high rents, and your competition has all the bells and whistles, guess what? You're probably going to struggle getting the people you want, and you might be surprised at the rents you actually can afford to get. The other thing is those old buildings, they're not getting any newer, and that's just the way it goes. They're not getting any newer, and so they're the farther they are away from the current trends, they're just going to continue to get farther away from the current trends. The trends are always changing, and they're always going up, right? And people want to get better and better and better. And so the next level is always a much higher level, and your property is going to just be farther and farther behind. So those are things we look at, we think about when we're buying an asset. Criteria, strategy, team, and risk tolerance. And then, a lot of different categories within that. Of course, that's not the only things we're looking for, but those are kind of the main big things that we want to see. As I've gone in this industry longer, I want to see prettier properties make more money. They just do. They're more attractive to everybody. People want to live in them. So that's one thing we really look at. Is this an attractive looking property inside and out? All right, that's it for today. You have a fantastic rest of the day. Make every day Saturday.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. I appreciate you being a loyal listener. Say, I would love to have you go on to our Facebook page and subscribe. Give us a thumbs up. Go on to iTunes or wherever you listen and give us a rating and review. Don't forget to subscribe. It's a rating and review. Just helps us push this out to more and more people and continue to grow our audience and hopefully positively affect a ton of people out there that really need this and want this. So the other thing I've got for you is a free ebook on my website. So go on to venturedproperties.com, venturedproperties.com, and download our free ebook on real estate and on syndication. And I've got some data points in there, some really good stuff for you. So I'd love to have you take a look at that. It's free. I'm not expecting anything from it. And also, look, if you want some help in multifamily, want some help learning, growing, getting your business off the ground, I would love to talk to you about what it would look like to work with me potentially and see if that's a good fit. So you can go to coachwithdex.com and check that out. And we can definitely have a call. Thanks a lot for listening. You make it a fantastic rest of the day. I'll catch you on the next episode.